third down and 20.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third and 20 Dynasty Podcast. It's just the JT and Frank show, season 3, episode 27. It's Super Bowl week. My prediction for the Super Bowl that no one cares about, I'm going to say Eagles 31, Chiefs 24. Go Birds.
I don't want the Eagles to win, but I do think they're going to win as well. I'd go a little bit lower scoring though. Give me like a weird one, like a 26-21.
All right, I don't even know how you got a 26, but cool.
No, I don't either, but some weird
two touchdowns,
failed,
4 field goals,
2-point conversion, yeah. Missed extra point stuff going on.
All right, well, that was enough Super Bowl talk. It doesn't really impact Dynasty, and I'm sure you didn't tune in to hear our takes about the Super Bowl. You can click literally anywhere else. But yeah, that's just kind of the marking point of where we are. So after this week, though, is full on straight into the off season. We're going to have all the trades and moves and stuff. We do have some news and notes to get to as I'm pulling it up here. I'm going to kick it off with one that's like, it should be big news. It kind of happened the day after recorded, so, and it happened for a second time. We have Tom Brady retiring. I mean, I actually thought he was going to play another year, like probably not on the Buccaneers is what I was going to go with. I would have guessed, you know, another team like Las Vegas, for example. But I think Tom decided, why am I going to try and play another year if I don't think I'm a Super Bowl competitor? Like, it's just going to tarnish my legacy. I say I play till I'm 45, I'm 45. So with that, that means the Tampa Bay Buccaneers do not have a quarterback, unless you consider Kyle Trask a quarterback, who Lunas infamously took in the first round of our 2021 mock draft when we did it. But Frank, what do you think that means to like Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, I don't know, like Leonard Fournette, Rashad White?
Yeah, this is definitely a really weird offense. It's going to have to undergo a transition. Mike Evans is a guy that I was definitely trying to heavily sell last year when you could still get a first form. Actually, I was able to get more than a first form, which I was really surprised at. Right now, I'm really not sure if I'm as heavily selling simply because he's no longer in that first round range, especially no Brady. No one's paying it right now. So, I'm not really sure if I'm going out and purchasing him, like doing one of those contender strats. I know a couple episodes ago I had said the same thing, like, oh, transition your assets in the D-hop. I actually think that that's a bad move too, and you should go younger. I just think that like Keenan Allen, Mike Evans, D-hop, these types of players, you know, the guys that 4 years ago were the wide receiver ones in your fantasy leagues, especially because now we're going to get into A.J. Green is now officially retired. Kind of something we also all saw coming. T.Y. Hilton is now kind of done. I just think now the changing of the guard is in for all of these dudes. I'm not going to be purchasing any shares, and I'm going to be selling at their keep trade cut price if I can get it. I just don't think you can.
All right, so you're going with the sell at cost kind of strategy here, but
I'd offer him out.
Yeah. Chris Godwin, I'm like more hesitant towards. Mike Evans, I could see why at this point. I mean, all he's done has been like has succeeded though, regardless of who's quarterback.
Yeah, I completely understand that. But at the same time, when you look at what he's probably going to get you fantasy wise out of the next 2 years, I think his name value is a little bit higher than what a great player. I think Mike Evans, fantastic dude. You know, 5 years ago, he's one of my favorite start. I mean, even like 3 years ago, I was taking him in a lot of startups because I thought, okay, Mike Evans, almost like what I think a guy like Terry McLaurin is right now, even better, right? Mm-hmm. A guy that's probably just going to put up guaranteed 1,000-yard floor. He's good. He can produce with bad quarterbacks. I don't want that when he's going into this period of his career where he's probably going to be losing a step. You can make an argument he already has compared to earlier in his career. That's only going to continue. And now that there's no Brady, not even just no Brady, the Bucs offense, I think, is going to be the worst Bucs offense we've seen in years. Because even before Brady, it was the Jameis Winston, we are going to, like with Bruce Arians, 30, just 30. Chuck the ball everywhere, right? Like,
yeah.
So I'll take that. I think that's great for fantasy, at least. So Godwin, though, if we want, unless you have another take on Evans, because I think we're kind of just going to agree on him.
Yeah.
Godwin, I actually think is a really good buy right now. I think he's just being way too discounted.
I agree with that too. Now the question though is, personally, I don't really care who most teams who the quarterback throwing it to them is. I just care more so about the offensive philosophy and if they're going to pass a lot more and whatnot. But we do have to acknowledge that like this team doesn't have a quarterback. I mean, essentially the entire NFC South doesn't have quarterbacks. I can't imagine they're going to be rolling into this year, into 2023, with Kyle Trask as their starting quarterback. But I don't know. They don't have a great draft spot to go get one unless you're saying Anthony Richardson, who I think is just another player that I don't think would be a very good quarterback. Free agency, Jimmy G, like who's going to be this Buccaneers quarterback?
I think kind of what you said before, though, I don't really care in terms of Chris Godwin who the quarterback is necessarily, because I think the whole who is your quarterback issue is largely overblown unless, like you said, you're really going to be one of these teams that's like, let's just say two standard deviations below the average of passing attempts. That's cause for concern, right? You're the Falcons this year. You're the Bears this year. That's cause for concern. But I just don't think that's going to happen with the Bucs offense. Maybe they're a below average passing attack. I don't know. I think that there's a good chance that they bring in someone in free agency. They draft a guy, but he doesn't play. Maybe he plays middle of the season. But I think that there's a good chance that one of these lower tier free agency guys gets a chance in Tampa Bay. Maybe like a Baker Mayfield, maybe a Sam Darnold somehow ends up there. One of these types of dudes.
Didn't even consider my guy Baker. Completely forgot that he could be a possibility.
And we've seen this offense still has talent. It's not completely talentless. Like it's not amazing, but it's not bad.
This NFC South, we're going to talk about a different quarterback situation in the NFC South shortly, but it's completely up for grabs with what team's going to be good or not. But I'm going to just transition us. I'll skip around the news and notes a little bit here because, I mean, I talked about the philosophy. You know, if you're going to pass less. And now we also have Dad 30 in chat asking about this team that we're going to get to.
Yeah.
Any chance we see Malik Willis be the quarterback this year? Realistically speaking, Tannehill salary, Titans draft the QB, or free agent signing? Well, there's actually a report out today with the coordinators and coaching with the Titans. It seems like Ryan Tannehill is going to be the starter for that's what's anticipated. Ryan Tannehill will be the starter going forward for the Tennessee Titans. Vrabel admitted in his, I don't know if it was a press conference or just him being asked, that the Titans need to get better passing the ball. They need to pass the ball more, which, I mean, most people could point to because, like, when you're so reliant on Derrick Henry, you know, 30-year-old running back, like, chances are it's not going to go great for you guys. The team picked up Josh Dobbs off practice squad to start in what was essentially a playoff game for them. So that tells you what they think about Malik Willis and his readiness. I just don't think I'm going to see Malik Willis improve enough in just one offseason if they're taking someone off the practice squad and starting him over him. So to me, yeah, it sounds like Ryan Tannehill will be the starter. Now, what does that mean? I don't think that's great for Treylon Burks or any of these Titans pass catchers. I can't even pronounce his name, the tight end who's always hard.
Chikwueze Okonkwo.
Yes, thank you. That was a good job. yes. I just think the Titans in general are going to have a tough time from an offensive standpoint. I don't know if you agree, disagree.
Well, yeah, I agree that I don't believe that Malik Willis is going to be the starter, but if we're going to go from a dynasty perspective, I think that's kind of priced in right now that, okay, yeah. Malik Willis looked so bad that he's not going to get another opportunity. I think he still will have an opportunity.
I mean, not first round pick.
He's like a third.
Maybe round. Not. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not actually. I don't know.
So, I mean, because I'm more on your side, I really don't think he improves enough. And what is he getting traded for right now?
Malik Willis, I can pull it up on Keep Trade Cut.
I'm going to assume he's a third. I doubt anyone. No one's given a second for him. I'm just questioning, like, is he even worth a third? Could you get a third for him if you try to trade him?
So where was he going in the start of rookie drafts? Like, that was,
he was going somewhere in the mid second.
Mid second? Yeah. So, I mean, and he's only hurt his stock.
Yeah, mid early second, maybe, because of the rushing upside.
Yeah. He's 22-22 on Keep Trade Cut. Nice.
Yeah, so nice, he's a third.
There. Yeah, he's 2023 pick 302 is about what you could trade him for.
I just don't think he's worth the is he? Because honestly, like, I think that people, like, Malik Willis just doesn't have it between the ears right now. He's not seeing the field correctly. He's not getting rid of the ball on time. But that doesn't mean that he can't develop into that, right? Like, you give him a little bit of time to really get with the program. I it seems like he's a really hard-working guy. 302 just feels a little expensive for, like, that being the reasoning, though, for him to succeed, right?
Yeah, I can't really think of a time where I've seen a quarterback who's gotten a playing opportunity and then just immediately been replaced and then gone on to be successful. I mean, if there's probably one that I'm forgetting, but, like, that's just such, like, a needle in the haystack kind of situation. I feel like that I'm not going to be banking on Malik Willis being the starter.
I mean, I guess in terms of, like, what degree, because, like, okay, you know, Drew Brees was a guy that I guess kind of got replaced by Rivers and then went on to have a Hall of Fame career, arguably better than Rivers. But then again, you know, we're talking about a guy who was a starting quarterback already, right? Yeah, it's not like he was, you know, two games in, it was like a guy can't even complete a pass to a receiver.
Yeah, it's crazy how the community thought Willis might go 102 or at least first round NFL draft pick to barely nothing. Frank was so mad on draft day.
I wanted the Steelers to take him, but I don't think it's that crazy. You can see it right now. I mean, it's happened with so many quarterbacks that
it's Anthony
Richardson. He has the physical tools, right? He has the physical tools. Clearly, the NFL teams in these interviews and what they heard from the Liberty coaching staff or scouts or whatever were right in that the guy just can't play at the NFL speed. He can't play within an NFL scheme, which was one of the major knocks. It just happens to be that is the case to, like, the most extent possible. But he has the talent of a first rounder. You know what I'm saying? Like,
there's that talent word again, though.
He 100% does. He 100% does.
Richardson. Sure, you just throw out, like they have tools, but, like, if you can't put the tools together, like, what am I doing? I'm just dealing with spare parts, you know? Unless I'm a true genius who can build it from the ground up, you're just going to have a player who's going to be sitting on your bench, and eventually they'll be released, and, you know, maybe they'll be a journeyman, maybe they'll be in the CFL, like, I don't know, but at this point, I'm not spending a third on Malik Willis if he can't even beat out Josh Dobbs for what was a playoff game. It was essentially a playoff game. Yeah. All right. That's enough Titans talk. I don't think too many people.
Hold on. Ryan Tannehill right now. I want to touch on, I don't trust the Devy community to evaluate quarterbacks. Yeah, I think evaluating quarterbacks in general is just the most colossal shit show, because there's two things. One, there's, like, nine, probably more, different types and ways for these quarterbacks to succeed. There's not really, like, a stable metric that's like, okay, if this one's high, it's always going to work. Especially because people can get hidden within scheme at the quarterback position. So, like, you know, you see a guy like Stetson Bennett right now, maybe he is amazing, but I'm not going to come out here and say that Georgia offense looks entirely difficult to run. You've got super mutants left, right, and center. You can just run screen passes all day and be a ranked team in the SEC, right? Basically make the SEC championship. That, and the quarterbacks always have to be improving. There have been very, very few quarterbacks who can roll up day one in the NFL and play. So every single dude, you have to project them if they can get better.
The NFL is, like, a multi-billion dollar business. Like, each team's worth, like, at least billions. Like, the Panthers sold for what? Like, $4.2 billion or something like that? I don't know. They sold for a crazy amount of money, right? And the star player of the team and the team, like, you know, what is getting you to the Super Bowl and was making your team most valuable is the quarterback position. So these teams have all invested tons of money into, you know, scouting and analytics and whatnot to try and find like who's going to be the best quarterbacks and everything. And even they can't get it right. So why am I going to trust at Debbie Timmy, you know, 320 on Twitter to tell me who the good and bad quarterbacks are? So that I do agree with Joe. It's just like, if the NFL teams can't figure this out, like, how are we going to figure it out? And I mean, the only thing I'll say, though, is if I'm going after quarterbacks, I'm going to go after the ones that have the best opportunities. And which ones have the best opportunities? The ones that have the most draft capital invested in them. So the first round picks, specifically the ones drafted in the top 15, which I've talked about in the past, like those are the ones that historically speaking are most likely to be successful. I don't know. I don't have anything else to add on that point. We're talking about Ryan Tannehill, though, right? What were you going to say about?
I just think he's a good buy right now in Dynasty. I think he's a consensus buy, though.
He's always been a good buy to me, like past, I don't know, 3-4 years. He's just always been criminally underrated. Like, he's not going to get you quarterback one numbers, but he's going to give you steady quarterback two. And, you know, you can invest in other places where you could get multiple, you know, top 12 players at their position while having just that steady, you know, 16, 17 points from Ryan Tannehill at that spot.
I just think you're essentially getting him at a high-end backup price for a guy that you look around the league, there's a pretty darn good chance that he's going to be a starter next year, like he's just been announced, but not only that, like a starter the year after, right? So you're getting what is a good bet at a 2-year starter at a high valued backup, very low end quarterback in these super flex leagues. Classic example of a dude. Now, I don't love to do this at the quarterback position, but if you really want like a QB3, or maybe you just want an army of maybes as your QB2 behind one stud, a dude that you can add to your team after pivoting off of either a highly valued draft pick or a highly valued young player, you get a bunch of assets. One of those second round picks you get in return on top of the deal, you turn around and flip for a Tannehill. I think that's the way that I would look to get into him right now.
That's a very good move. All right. Anything else we want to add on Titans, or are we good to move on?
Yo, peace out, Dad 30. Appreciate it, man.
Oh, see you. Thank you. All right. AJ Green retired.
You knew this.
Crazy news for the Dynasty community. He hasn't been putting up points for a few years now.
I'll give him credit because he had that major, major, major injury. And he kind of had, like, I'm pretty sure it was back-to-back injured years. And then he kind of came up out of nowhere because it looked like he was done for. And then all of a sudden, he completely revitalized his career for like half the season, maybe even like 2/3 of the season for that 1 year with the Cardinals. And then he kind of chugged along a little bit here and there, but
that's
a great player.
All right, now actually to try and tie it into Dynasty community talk here, that's why I don't mind throwing like 4th round picks for these receivers, that these aging receivers that have been injured. Julio Jones, AJ Green and stuff, like if I deem it and my team needs it kind of thing, because there is always that like slim chance that they do kind of strike that magic again. Antonio Brown's another name, if he, you know, could keep it to just on the field stuff, but there's always that slim chance that they're able to like recreate that magic and give you like actually very good numbers for, you know, that kind of that's where I think your best value of a 4th round pick is going to. Other than just the random dart throws, it's getting that kind of crazy lottery ticket to back to this elite player.
That's interesting because I feel like most of the times I've tried to shoot for a little bit younger but higher value type veterans, where I would look at a guy that, like Juju right now, I think is a good example of a player that he feels a lot older than he actually is. Because he's been so around, like he was one of those top dynasty receivers. He's just no longer there, so he's kind of just like yesterday's news. You can get him for really cheap. I tend to like going after those guys.
Yeah,
and I actually think that the way I'd rather use this is just for me personally. I'd rather use my 4th round picks is either just in the draft or to get kind of like on the uptrend of a trending waiver player. Like maybe you have to be early, but potentially getting this is the first one that's coming off the top of my head, so just bear with me.
I have one in mind.
I wouldn't have done it.
You're going to say the same.
Brock Purdy would have been a guy. It's like, okay, all of a sudden he vaults into a role and, you know, fuck it, send the fourth or the fifth or whatever and see if someone bites on potentially getting a lottery ticket waiver claim.
I was thinking Rashid Shaheed before he, at this point now, I think he's probably worth more than a fourth.
I mean, maybe when he was first picked up. The thing is that I'm usually very against that. I'm usually the person that's like, I'm selling all those players. Like I'm just thinking that's something you could do, because if it pans out, the upside is so tremendous, and the downside is okay, you lose your fourth. Like I'm in leagues where people trade their fourths away as soon as they get them for nothing. Me.
I don't know about,
or just nothing, like a throw-in to get a trade done, right? Like they don't give a shit. Like it's nothing.
To me, fourths don't mean a whole lot. Like if you're coming to me and you're offering five fourths for a player, it's nothing to me. That does equal basically zero. But I get where you're coming from, though. All right, this one I found interesting news. It did just drop before we started recording. Derek Carr is visiting with the Saints. He's got a no trade clause for the Raiders, but you know, it's been made very clear that Derek Carr's time with the Raiders is over. So he is going to have to find another team. And at first I was like, why would the Saints want to do this? But circling back to what we were talking about with the Bucks and Brady and everything, this NFC South is just wide open. And you know, the NFC, the Saints defense is still pretty solid. They have some pieces to go around, and you know, we're not too far from removed from a point in time where Derek Carr was leading the Raiders to playoffs. He did it just 2 years ago, really, or I guess technically last year. I don't know what you want to call that, but I don't hate it. I've never been a Derek Carr guy. I've never said to go out and buy Derek Carr, but from the Saints' perspective, I don't hate it.
I just think that as long as you're not giving up a ridiculous price, I don't know what the price they're going to get for Carr.
Can't be that high.
But let's just assume it's a little bit more than a singular first. I think that that's generally like a one, a two.
He's
a starting quarterback in the league. That's just what they go for.
You think so?
I think there's enough demand. But you're going to get that from someone or the equivalent value, right? Like multiple shitty team second, you know, like pick 34.
Sure, but here's the issue from like the Raiders' perspective. They've said they don't want Derek Carr. Derek Carr's got no trade clause, and he's going to cost them a ton of money if he stays on the books. So they have a lot of incentives to get rid of him. They don't really have much leverage to be like, hey, we're just gonna, you know, we're gonna wait.
I just think the leverage is that teams need quarterbacks.
There are a lot of teams.
Not a whole lot of great ones.
That whole NFC South could honestly trade for him. So
especially now, part of this is going to be what happens with Aaron Rodgers potentially, right? Because if Aaron Rodgers retires, then the great veteran quarterbacks that a team like the Jets have already said that they're going to try and get went down. Now maybe they just settle with a Jimmy G. They don't care. They're like, okay, we don't want to give up the first round pick to go get Derek Carr. But if you or me or the Jets, are you settling at the quarterback position if you're going to go get a veteran? Like, why not get, if you think Derek Carr is good, like why not get him or Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, that Jets team is the Jets, so it's going to be same old Jets every year. But they're built very well, very good. I don't know what the grammatical term there is, but it's a good team. They've got a great defense. They're a team that can compete. I know it's a tough decision, a division and everything. And, you know, the conference itself, too, is very difficult. But this is a team that can compete and can play in the playoffs and make runs if they solve that quarterback position. So I get it. But I wouldn't give it up for Aaron Rodgers. Maybe Derek Carr. But, like, do you feel confident with this team, with Derek Carr? Is he going to go in and he's going to be able to beat Josh Allen, you know, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert? He's going to get them past those kind of teams? Like, I don't think so.
I don't look at it like that. I look at it, what is the price I'm getting a franchise quarterback for? And I think that you're just getting it for a lot cheaper than you normally would. So if you're talking about, like you're saying, I think the Saints believe, and I believe, that their roster is a whole lot better than people are giving them credit for. And what's funny is, yeah, is that they gave away Gardner Johnson, one of the better, at least in my opinion, one of the better D-backs in football, and their defense was still nasty. Like they still had a bunch of good players. They have some good young offensive pieces. I think it makes sense. If this does happen, if Derek Carr goes to the Saints, all of a sudden, like, is the script flipped on the Saints offense? All of a sudden, because, like, in my head, okay, you get an actual quarterback in Derek Carr. You trade Taysom Hill to the Broncos so he can reunite with his lover. Now, all of a sudden, like, okay, Alvin Kamara might be kind of eaten again with a Derek Carr. You don't have the mobile quarterback. You know, maybe they figure out that they have an all-pro level running back. I mean, any of the pass catchers, the stock is at least going to be as good, if not better than last year, probably better than last year. I mean, things will just be really looking up if you're that Saints offense when you insert Derek Carr.
Yeah, instantly they get significantly better, and that's like, you know, Michael Thomas should be coming back from injury. It seemed like it was a prolonged injury based on his timetable of when he decided to get surgery, then, you know, the mess up of the surgery, I think, that happened or whatever that went on there, then getting re-injured. So you'll have Michael Thomas back, you'll have Chris Olave. That's a very good 1-2 duo. Derek Carr, Alvin Kamara, like you said, there is that Alvin Kamara outstanding issue, like he might get suspended, who knows. But yeah, as a whole, I'd point to, if you were asking me, like, what offense do I think is very underpriced, the Saints would definitely be near the top of my list as a team where I'm looking to get into. And that's even considering how much I dislike Chris Olave coming into the NFL, on top of, you know, him being ranked as the wide receiver 9 on Keep Trade Cut. I think he's adequately priced there, but I think the rest of the team as a whole is pretty much underpriced.
Yeah, I agree with that. Wide receiver 9, I think when it's all said and done, there's a little bit of a tier of receivers there, and kind of like you said, it's just going to be a fair price for Olave. Maybe it's a smidge expensive. I wouldn't be buying because I'd rather buy into a DJ Moore right now than pay the premium to get Olave.
I'm not paying that either. The problem that I always struggle with is, I don't know how realistic this is, but he's ranked like right next to Kyler Murray. And it's like, you're telling me I could get my franchise quarterback who puts up 20 something points per game at the same price as
it's
this.
It's not like, realistic.
Yeah, it's probably not, but I always struggle when I see that on Keep Trade Cut.
You know, it's an interesting, like, quick topic here, I guess, impromptu, is that I feel like Keep Trade Cut, every year the rankings have gotten a little bit worse in terms of trades that you can actually complete.
Do you think that's the case, or do you think?
Yes, I believe that's the case.
Sure, but do you think that, like, we haven't gotten smarter to this? Like the Dynasty community as a whole hasn't gotten more involved. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but like, the people that are watching this YouTube, the people that are on Twitter and stuff, don't represent the entire Dynasty community. Now, I'm not sure what percentage of those people, those heavily involved Dynasty users, make up Keep Trade Cut's full user base. If you know what I'm saying, like you might just type in, you might just be a newfound Dynasty player and you're typing into Google, like, Dynasty football trade calculator, and that's just the first thing that pops up, and you have not had any knowledge other than that, like, you're just going through the motions or whatever, and that's kind of skewing Keep Trade Cut. I don't know what I'm trying to say is, like, are we just smarter now? Like, are we just, have we, like, gamed the system kind of thing? Like what seemed like a good and doable trade 3 years ago is no longer a good and doable trade to us, but still that on Keep Trade Cut.
Yes, no, I actually agree with that. I think that a lot of people in the Dynasty community have gotten smarter. But the problem is that that's not a lot of the times the average player that may be voting on the site.
Yeah, okay.
I think that that a majority of the people that vote on the site are not, at least to me, in tune with the meta, which basically to me means that the younger players should be valued like ridiculously high, and the pick should be ridiculously high. Not that that isn't the case on Keep Trade Cut. Like, I can make the argument that the rookie players and the second year players are overvalued. But when it comes to a Kyler Murray, right? To me, super young, still clear top end quarterback. You just rank him by points per game, and he's like top five, top 10 every season he's played. Why is he priced? Like, if you just look at startups too, where he goes in the startups and then what number he goes in Keep Trade Cut, it's just different. It's just like wildly different. And I feel like that happens with a bunch of players. Most specifically, we just see some running backs and receivers ranked over these quarterbacks where it's like that trade never gets done. The trade never gets done. Like, it's not even in the same stratosphere. Trey Lance, I think, is another example right now. Yeah, I understand people are kind of panicking because of the whole Brock Purdy thing. But, like, dude, you try to trade for Trey Lance right now, you still have to pay a pretty hefty price to get a share of him. People aren't giving him away for free because of Brock Purdy, at least in a majority of the leagues that I play in. I've tried to trade for him in like 10 leagues. It's not like my sample size is super small.
That's true. Could just be the leagues that you're into, though, because you see it every day on Twitter. That's all like, grade this trade. And it's always like, how is this a dynasty trade? Like, how does this happen? Maybe we're just in the wrong leagues. I don't know. Skull says, I think QBs are way overvalued in one quarterback on Keep Trade Cut. I don't really play in any one quarterback leagues, but I could imagine that being the case. Replaceable that is in one quarterback. Anything else you wanted to add on that before?
Yeah, I guess just all in all, I feel like a year, 2 years ago, when Keep Trade Cup first came out, even I'm not sure if it came out 3 years ago or not. The time is like all one block now.
I know.
I just felt like if I offered a trade where the other dude was winning on Keep Trade Cut, it was almost like at least like half, if I did a mash trade doing that, every time it was getting accepted. Mm-hmm. Every time. That's what put me on to mash trading. I was like, holy shit, I'm able to sell everyone. Maybe I am in just more competitive leagues, because I'm joining a bunch of orphans from like all these like dynasty head people on Twitter. So maybe it's just more competitive leagues and their values are more in tune with mine. But now I do mass offer strats and I'm like struggling to trade some of these players. I'm doing the same strats that I had done 2 years ago. It's just harder to move them.
Yeah, it does sound like though joining those top tier leagues is kind of maybe not a huge factor, but definitely somewhat of a factor. Looking though, moving on to the Senior Bowl did happen, and this is just, you know, my thoughts. So I'll let you take the lead.
Well, yeah, I actually wanted to more so that because I didn't watch the Senior Bowl this year. Usually I extensively watch the Senior Bowl. I didn't have time this year. But I saw a huge debate on Twitter versus about the whole early declare versus senior declare in Dynasty with these rookie players. And, you know, should you even pay attention to the Senior Bowl? And you have the obvious examples of guys that have panned out. In my opinion, those would be guys like Justin Herbert. I would think that Mac Jones was a success story from the Senior Bowl. I mean, you could say otherwise, but I feel like generally speaking, like decent. I mean, there's been a whole laundry list of players that, you know, played well at the Senior Bowl and were good in the NFL. And then there's, I think, an even longer list of absolute fucking bait, where it's like they played amazing at the Senior Bowl and then they ended up completely sucking, right? The Dwayne Eskridges and things of that nature. So there was this whole, especially around like Tank Dell and Tyjae Spears, where we see, you know, a couple highlights where they're kind of cooking people in the open field. And then you have all the people being like, A, this is unfair for the defenders, and B, like, this does not matter, right? Like, they're seniors. Yeah. You know, we'd rather draft the underclassmen players. So, I know you are a huge proponent of the early declare versus senior. Well, which, wait, hold on. Let me just explain what this is for someone who may not know.
Okay.
Basically, if you're an early declare, if you come out to the NFL draft before you finish college, meaning you're a redshirt sophomore or a true junior, right? You can come out. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be on campus for 3 years. That's the rule before you're allowed to be eligible for the draft. So, like, basically, as soon as they're eligible for the draft, for reasons that JT will probably explain, they decide to go out and skip a year of school or potentially two to go to the NFL early, versus these senior players or even redshirt seniors have been at school for 4 or 5 years and are then going into the NFL draft. Why do you care so much about this for someone who may not have looked at the studies you have?
I want to give it like a little bit of a qualifier. It's more so for wide receivers than quarterbacks and whatnot, for the same reason that I was talking about quarterbacks with, you know, Devi Timmy 320 or whatever on Twitter. It's just so hard to evaluate the quarterback position that, like, at that position, I more so just care if you're a first round pick or not. Like, I don't know why the likes of Will Levis, who stayed a year, has his stock go up a bunch, considering this is a tougher quarterback class compared to the likes of Sam Howell, who stayed a year and just had his, like, tank to, I think he was a fifth round pick, if I remember, in a year where there was a pretty weak quarterback class. I don't get that. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand how the teams value it. But why I care largely, in large part due to wide receivers, and then to a smaller extent, but still somewhat do care for running backs, is a lot of the time when you see wide receivers have good production and like you say, the steady increase from year over year, they will have, I forget what it's called, but there's people that talk to them and they're, you know,
like the agent, draft advisory.
Draft advisory. Thank you. Yes. That's what I was looking for, the word. And they'll tell you, hey, we think you're going to be a pick 28 in the NFL draft. We think you're going to be pick 52 in the NFL draft. You're going in the range of 50 to 70. We're going to say you go there. And they say, hey, I'd rather just, you know, go out, get my signing bonus now. I'm an NFL player. I'm good. I'm going to be making a ton of money to do this. Why not just go out now instead of wait? Now, NIL might be changing this. I don't know. I don't know how NIL is going to affect all of this. But it made a lot of sense for players to be like, hey, I'm already a first-round pick. Why am I going to, like, risk injury or whatnot in college to stay another year? Like, I've been told I'm good. I'm going to go out. I don't have anything left to prove. I've already dominated at this sport. Now I'm going to go dominate at the next level, kind of thing. And it's been proven for wide receivers mostly that if you come out early and you're a high pick, you're going to have a good career. Like, you are much, you fall into the bucket, the early declare, productive in college kind of thing, day one as in first round pick, or day two, second and third round pick. If you're there and you're in that bucket, you are set up. The probability is much higher of you being a good NFL player, which intuitively makes sense. Like, you didn't have to, you know, get another year under your belt to then dominate, you know, players that could be 3-4 years younger than you in college from bad teams or whatnot to raise your stock. Like, you just did it on your own kind of thing. Skull saying JT is a junior / alpha kind of guy over 6'2" for wide receivers is JT style. Yes. But I will get to that when we talk about wide receivers. And yes, I do like Quentin Johnston. He's my wide receiver one. For quarterbacks, it's whatever. It's just first round
pick. I agree with that. The quarterbacks, it's such a shit show that it's like, who cares if they're it's not really predictive whether they're a senior, junior, freshman. I mean,
a lot of the ones that we've seen who are rising the ranks are Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert. Joe Burrow, for example, like, we didn't even know who his name was, really. Like, not many people are going to tell you they knew Joe Burrow until that crazy season for LSU in his last year. Quarterbacks or whatever. Running backs, I also, like, Najee Harris is the one that I'll point to as, like, the good example, but then Travis Etienne is one that I'll point to as a bad example, where I was like, I was super low on both of them for not coming out the year they did. Although I thought it made sense because they were going to be coming into a much more competitive running back class where you already had Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers. I'm missing J.K. Dobbins. I think I'm still missing someone from that class who was already very good too. it made sense that they weren't as good as those guys. They were getting told they're not going to get as high. So, you know what? We'll let you raise your draft stock in a lesser year. You're playing on very good teams, Alabama and Clemson. You have the starting role. You're just going to boost your stock more by being those front men for those big name schools. Like, you're going to have a better draft. And they did. Both were first round picks. But I just think it says a lot for those players to stay back when they could have gone to the NFL 1 year earlier. Now, I tended to be, I don't know how to phrase this right, Najee Harris made that theory look good. Travis Etienne didn't, because he's actually been pretty good now for the Jags in his first full healthy year. So I don't know. Running backs, it's to a lesser extent. This is mostly for wide receivers is what I use it for.
Okay. Yeah, well, it kind of just sparked this huge debate on Twitter of kind of just like what along the lines of what it, you were saying, it, the early declare versus seniors, what, and that these senior players, like the Senior Bowl is just a bait because you're going to start falling in love with lesser valued prospects, right? Yes. And I have a couple takes about this because I actually, a couple years ago, didn't really care as much about the early declare stuff, but after reading a bunch of these studies, right, having to listen to you every week and whatnot, I actually factor the early declare versus senior declare into my process of players, but I think I do it to a way lesser extent than you and what a lot of other people do. I think a lot of people kind of just shut it off. It's either, it's very binary. It's either you're early declare, I like you, you're senior declare, boom, you stink. Whereas I kind of like to use it more so as only with the blue chip rookie prospects. Okay, yeah, I might bump you up a tier if you're an early declare, right? You might go from being a guy, okay, if you check off all the other boxes and you're the early declare, I might give you that slight half a tier bonus. Oh, if I need to choose between two equal prospects and one's an early declare and one's a senior, they're both first round prospects. Yeah, I'm going to go with the early declare. I'm going to side with the data analytics. But I disagree with the people that are coming out and saying, A, that the Senior Bowl is worthless, and B, that the early declare stuff even matters for these round three and beyond players. I don't give a flying fuck what year you are once you were betting on an outlier, right? My take is that once it reaches the third round, you are betting on an outlier. One of those in the NFL draft, third round, right? I haven't even gotten to third round rookie draft, right? Once you're in the third round of your rookie draft, it's the same thing. For those guys to seriously pan out, to make an actual difference championship-wise, playoff-wise on your fantasy team, they need to be an outlier. So you like, I just don't think that, oh, the whatever the percentage increase odds for entirely, right? Because you're looking at a lot of the blue chips and the shits for both early declare and senior declare prospects, right? When you bucket them in total, whatever, like the 20, 15% more likelihood they get a top 24 season for the early declares. At that point, I feel like it's all thrown out the window when we're drafted in the fourth round of my rookie draft. Every single guy has a laundry list of knocks of why I shouldn't draft him, right? Like, I feel like early declare senior, that's the last one on the list I really give a shit about. I care about the other ones. So that's where I heavily disagree. And that's why I actually really like the Senior Bowl, is that I do think the Senior Bowl is for people like us to get a good glimpse at potentially finding difference making later on players. But I think it's even more important to find the guys that you just think suck. You know, you get a chance to watch these guys practice. That's pretty darn valuable. You get a chance to see, man, that dude just looks like he's in mud. That dude looks like he can't run. You know, it's like, sweet. Now there's a landmine I could have taken, right? I get to avoid that shit. Like,
yeah. I think I find myself agreeing more and more with what you're saying there, where it's like the later round guys, you know, truth be told, though, once it gets past the third round of the NFL draft, I would also say that everything gets thrown out the window, because players that I really like, like a Seth Williams, for example, who I think was undrafted, or if not, he was a late round pick by the Broncos. He, if he was like a day two pick, like a second, third round player, he would have been very high in the analytical department, but he just wasn't. And so I found that my preconceived notions on Seth Williams caused me to still be super in on him because of, I was like, if he was just an early, like if he was an early declare, if he was just had that draft capital, he'd be so much better. But clearly NFL teams looked at Seth Williams and said, you're not worthy of this kind of pick. Same thing with David Bell, who, even though he was a third round pick this year, he was like the last pick, and with like compensatory picks, however you say that.
Yeah, one of those comp picks.
Yeah, yeah. He was essentially a fourth round pick. Like it was, and you know, that should have been a clue, like, hey, like you should be out on this guy who was an analytical darling and you know, move on to someone else. So yeah, at that point it does end up being just a dartboard throw, and what your eyes tell you might actually help. It does just, to me, it's a dart throw anywhere, though. Like, it really depends on them getting that opportunity with the NFL team. And there's you know, your eyes could tell you so much, mm-hmm. but it doesn't tell you what this guy's doing on the practice field, what he's doing, you know, watching film, grinding film and whatever, and how he's getting his role with the actual NFL team and how he's getting onto the field. Because once you're past the third round, it gets a lot harder to get on the field. It gets a lot harder to make the team. Like,
right. That's actually an interesting thing that you brought up, because I remember, you know, because Skull saying I drafted Deontay Johnson in the third round, my first year Dynasty rookie draft, my first and second round picks busted. Yeah, I loved Deontay that year. I drafted him in 75% of my rookie drafts at the time. It sounds a lot more impressive. I was only in like four leagues. So, but yeah, like I felt the same way. But I remember scouting Gabriel Davis, and I was listening to the commentaries of the during the game. It was just some random UCF game, right? Mm-hmm. And they were going on and on about his work ethic. And I'm just like, I didn't really care at the time. I'm like, they'll probably say that about anyone. But then, if you know, if you turn around and picked him up in the late third of your rookie draft, you're probably pretty happy. And now that you're bringing that up, plus I actually think that stuff like that is really good. You know, I mentioned that with Sean Tucker last episode, that, you know, I've heard similar things about him from any person I've heard out of Syracuse. So, like, you know, that kind of stuff does matter. I don't know how to find it other than just watching these games back and just stumbling upon it. But, like, that is an element that probably helps these players, you know, these guys that just have that gritty level work ethic and are willing to just keep going, keep going, keep going. And if you can find it, going all in on these types of players with these dart throw picks, I feel like those are ones that work out more times than not. I just don't think that there's really a process to consistently figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, if you could, you'd be making a lot of money figuring out which of these third, fourth, fifth round rookie picks, dynasty rookie picks, end up hitting.
I don't know if I'm a fool for trying to figure some of this into my process, right? When I hear it watching these games and stuff.
Well, I don't know how you quantify, like, you know, like this guy.
I just believe in people, you know, I'm just believing the... Yeah. But I don't know, because I feel like we've also seen examples of people saying that sort of stuff and it just completely backfiring. So
yeah, Skull saying Seth Williams was a stiff, no athleticism. Same with Bell. David Bell. The problem with the no athleticism, and it's the I'm gonna conflate two problems here and why I get stuck with it, and maybe you can help me out here. There's just always, though, you could point to a similar prospect and be like, oh, but he was good. Like with David Bell, right? A lot of people are like, oh, this is very similar to what Keenan Allen was showing. Like, you know, like Keenan Allen didn't test very well. Rumors are, though, that he might have been injured for the 40 or the combine or whatever. But, you know, then you look like, oh, these guys were super productive. They kind of got slept on, blah, blah. David Bell, Keenan Allen, that's good comp. Same thing with like Sky Moore now, for example. You could be like, oh, he was super quiet this year, but you know, he came from that kind of smaller school. He didn't do much, but he's got a big role ahead of him with a great quarterback, Davante Adams. Like Sky Moore is just Davante Adams kind of thing. And it's difficult too. I actually didn't draft a whole lot of David Bell at school just because of where he was going. Didn't love it. But yeah. I don't know. Amon-Ra worked out.
Well, I think part of it, too, though, is that, you know, using examples from last year's rookie class isn't great as well, though, because David Bell, Skymore, yeah, these guys still have years to turn it around, which I think is a trap that we kind of fall into sometimes, is like labeling guys good and bad picks just a little bit too early. All right, speaking of these receivers, though, let's get into 2023, because Lance Zierlein, probably one of the most respected, if not the most respected scout in the, not necessarily the dynasty community, kind of just the NFL draft community, but a lot of people love Lance Zierlein, specifically his running back grades for their prospect models. He has a very good track record with these running backs. He came out with a mock draft and had Jalin Hyatt, the Tennessee receiver, as his wide receiver one. Not only that, going pick number 12 to the Texans, who we've seen be mocked a bunch of different receivers now, from Quentin Johnston to Addison, now to Hyatt, all from people respected within the mock draft industry. But that definitely sparked his name in the wide receiver one conversation, because Lance Zierlein does have Hyatt as his wide receiver one. Now, that comes with the caveat of him saying that he doesn't really love this receiver class. I think he comped it to
2016.
Yeah, 2016, that it was largely busts. But he does kind of think that Hyatt is the DK Metcalf of this year, the only X receiver that, even though he has his major knocks against him, he likes what he sees as the true prototypical receiver in this draft class. And to be honest with you, JT, I don't disagree. I actually really like Jalin Hyatt. I don't have him as my wide receiver one, but when you factor in the price that he's going for in dynasty drafts right now, getting a lot of T. Higgins vibes. I think that he's a guy that, I mean, he threatens defenses vertically just so well. Like, I just think he's a T. Higgins. I feel like he's the type of dude that if you have him one-on-one with one of these coverages that's in phase, right, with these dudes just trying to play zone or like way off man, that he can kind of just put his foot in the ground and get by you, give you a quick little shimmy move to open up your hips, as well as if you're going to press his ass, that even though Tennessee hid him a lot and did some stack bullshit, and their offense is just kind of running shooty to begin with, so it's annoying to press them, they're able to hide it. I feel like that's an area that he can develop. So for his price, I do really like Hyatt, even though it's probably going to increase.
Well, you know what? Let's call this the Jalin Hyatt. We'll cover him right here, and then we'll circle back to the rest of Zierlein's mock and kind of talk it out with where he's got other people ranked and whatnot. But the talking prospects, talking Jalin Hyatt. The problem I have with Jalin Hyatt, and I said this to about him before he like really started to shoot up like mock drafts and whatnot, was I thought this was like during the season. I thought he was kind of just like college Gabe Davis, where it's like he's catching like, you know, three or four passes a game, like he's breaking one for a touchdown kind of thing, but it's just not really consistent. And the problem where I have comparing him to T. Higgins is like T. Higgins was super productive. He got a lot more passes, and that's considering too, it's kind of a narrative, but you know, I'm using a narrative here, but Clemson, when they were up, would take T. Higgins out of the game. Like when they were just beating up on teams, like T. Higgins would just not be on the field. Like it was just, he did his work and then it was over. Jalin Hyatt, like he's in most of the game kind of thing, but he had that one game against Pitt where he had 11 catches, but he didn't really do much with it. And then other than that, you're seeing four or five, maybe six catches at times. He just kind of profiles like a burner, which I don't really like to draft. I mean, he's still not super high in what's it called? Rookie drafts, like dynasty rookie drafts. I'm sure that'll change though if he truly is the first wide receiver taken off the board. But that's just not a guy that I want to put my high draft pick into.
Where would you value him with a rookie pick this year? Like, ooh, context and everything.
I have my big board behind me somewhere, but it's going to take me too long to find it.
I'm going
to
get like an early second for you.
In the context that he's taken here by the Texans at 11 or whatever number it is?
No, just where do you value him right now?
Right now?
We were going to do a rookie draft in 10 minutes.
He's still behind Zay Flowers for me. He's behind Josh Downs. Hyatt gives me Henry Rugg vibes. Yeah, maybe. Maybe he gives you Henry Rugg vibes. Cool. I might agree with that. He's still behind Flowers and Josh Downs for me. So that puts him into the second round. I would say closer to mid than early second, but he's in that range. Like 205, 204, 205.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit higher. I have him at that very late first, very early second right now. And I think that's where he's falling currently, and I'd be the guy scooping him up there.
I think if this is the case, and he is, even if he's not the first wide receiver taken off the board, but if he's like a top 20 pick, I think you're going to see him shoot up.
Oh, if he's a first-round pick in general, he's probably going to shoot up into the first round of rookie drafts.
It's looking more and more like that. Where, I mean, I don't know how much it actually works out, right? Because, I mean, we're hyper-focused on Dynasty. But, like, you know, those speedster kind of players that are supposed to take the top off the defense, we see one almost every year get taken higher than we think they should, like a Henry Ruggs, maybe a Jalen Hyatt, where they help that theoretically help NFL teams more. I don't know how much I agree with that, but theoretically they help NFL teams more than, you know, they're going to give you fancy output. And that's probably more so where I'd put Jalen Hyatt. I'm just not going to bank on him doing that to NFL secondaries each week.
I just think I have him in a very similar, if not the same tier as Josh Downs and Zay Flowers right now. So I don't mind paying the same price to pick up those guys.
Is there a way to get to Skull's channel from, I want to subscribe to Skull. My next YouTube video is going to be on Zay Flowers. I really like him. I agree. I also really like Zay Flowers.
I'm starting to become really high on him. Yeah, and he's being mocked in the first dude that's just adding some value to this class. I want to talk about C.J. Stroud because I, the other day, kind of trashed C.J. Stroud on one of these previous episodes, but now I'm actually starting to warm up to the idea of him being the consensus 103. Started looking into the stats a little bit more. I actually do think that Stroud may, it's just he's so close, right? He's right on the cusp of being one of these very elite passers to me. I still wish I could get him at the price that Tua was going for in that 2020 draft, because I feel like when you look at the strength of both classes, like maybe the running backs will be just getting a little bit better draft capital in 2020 than in 2023, whereas 2023, I just feel like there's a shit ton of running backs that are going to get at least like okay draft capital. So maybe it's more the depth this year that's the running back class strength than the high end necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I am starting to like CJ Stroud. I'm definitely higher on him than I was a couple weeks ago. I was like, but the thing is that this is why I threw Bryce Young in here on the dock, is that you've kind of come out and said that you're not as high on CJ Stroud and Bryce Young as the community, and that you'd rather have RB2 above them and potentially your wide receiver one, and that more specifically you would just want to trade down from one of these quarterback picks to pick up one of those guys necessarily than, oh, I'm going to draft these guys over the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Why exactly. Do you think that?
I said before, from like a game theory perspective, right? Like I think Bijan Robinson steps on the field, I think he's RB1. Dynasty RB1, not rookie RB1. I think he's dynasty RB1. And even if he's not, he's RB2, but he's right up there, right? He's that young running back. He's going to have a ton of insulated value right off the bat. That's just going to keep going up, in my opinion. Quinn Johnson is that kind of player that I think is super athletic. If he gets that high first round, you know, top 20 first round pick, I think he is up there as well, where it's just, he steps on the field, I think he's going to be a top 15 wide receiver. Where at that position, how many there are, that's like super impressive. These two guys, Bryce Young, and I'll throw in Jahmyr Gibbs, although I've been wishy-washy on Jahmyr Gibbs and where I place him. But for right now, I'll say him as well. But talking about Bryce Young and CJ Stroud, I think they're pretty good quarterbacks, but I don't think they're like elite quarterbacks. And I think like when they're on the field, it's hard to even justify them in the top 10, maybe top 12 dynasty wise. Cause again, like I'm going to point to players like Kyler Murray, who I'm trying to pull up Keep Trade Cut right now to see the quarterback rankings. But like there are very good quarterbacks who are ranked pretty low. Yeah, Kyler Murray's quarterback 9, Deshaun Watson's quarterback 10. Like, there's just no way I'm ranking these two guys, Bryce Young and CJ Stroud, ahead of those kind of players. Like, I think they just their floor is like 20 plus points per game typically. We haven't seen it yet from Deshaun Watson on the Browns, but I think that's coming. So there's not a lot that like they're good. They've done a lot, especially Bryce Young. He does a lot in the face of pressure and everything. I mean, obviously he's had a lot of good players surrounding him. Not so much this year on Alabama, especially from the wideout position. But to me, they don't offer me much more in the run game or whatnot. I mean, we saw Stroud use his legs a little bit in the playoff game. But they're not ones that typically bring the ball down and run it. They're not going to get you that added bonus. It's going to be very dependent on where they go. You know, it's looking like one of them is probably going to be a Texan. The other one might be like a Panther or something, which wouldn't be as bad in my opinion. But I'm just worried about these guys and their development and whatnot and their value going forward. Because again, you're going to be getting essentially the quarterback 12, 13, 14 when you could be getting a high-end wide receiver one, a high-end running back one at that same spot. So why not just trade down, scoop up the value if you can, and get that better player. Now, that all being said, if I'm at the board at three, like if I'm on the clock at three and I have to choose between CJ Stroud and Quinn Johnston, I'm just going to take the value play and take CJ Stroud because I know I could trade him for a decent amount more, assuming so, more than I can Quinn Johnston at this point.
Okay, yeah, I'd probably do the same thing.
You're doing yourself a, sorry, one second. You're doing yourself a disservice by reaching on ADP because you're starting off hurting your value. It's like Najee Harris, for example, right? I did not like Najee Harris a lot. Like I probably valued him, I think I had him valued in the second round in the dynasty, like rookie draft, right? But if Najee Harris is falling to me at like 108, 109, I'm doing myself a disservice not picking Najee Harris at that point just because of like the preconceived value of Najee Harris, what his value is, what you can get for him. Compared to, I'm trying to think of a player that I had valued super high there. I don't know, was Rashad Bateman that year, right? Rashad Bateman was there. Yeah, reaching on Rashad Bateman over Najee Harris,
Elijah Moore might be a better example. Pick 11, let's say, and Najee's just there.
Yeah, it's just not the smart play. You can make up the value otherwise. You don't have to go get your guy right away. You can do other moves and whatnot to finagle it. So that's the story for another day, but yeah.
Right. I think right now the I'm sold on Bryce Young. I guess really quickly to touch.
I think
Bryce
he's good.
I just don't see a box he doesn't check. Other than okay, yeah, he's not the prototypical size, but I don't have my laptop plugged in to the charger.
Oh no, we're gonna be losing. Geez. Stream's going down. I could carry the stream if you're gonna look for it. Oh, okay.
Oh geez. Okay. That scared me. I got the low battery notification. I just think that Bryce Young to me checks every box I care about. I love his film, absolutely adore his film. I think that his anticipation is amazing, his scrambling ability is amazing. To me, he just looks like a dude that I could run an offense that can score fucking points. I could score more points than the Jets' last three games of 5 points per game. I would put my life savings, I could do that.
Yeah.
with him as my quarterback. I don't know, he was a great prospect, did well at Alabama. Like he just checks every box. CJ Stroud, he almost checks the boxes. He almost does. I just don't love paying that much of a premium for a guy who's going to get me basically zero rushing points. He's going to have similar rushing statistics to Kirk Cousins' best rushing year, I would say, which is essentially nothing, right? Maybe like 150 yards and a touchdown or two on the year.
Yeah, other than the championship game, there's only one time where he broke 15 yards rushing, and that was against Northwestern.
Giving the risk of quarterbacks in general, even guys that are great passers that we like, that there's plenty of those guys that have busted out. is it really worth spending the 103 this year and holding that motherfucker? For like, and you're just saying, yeah, this is the dude, I believe in him. And rather than doing something like what you were saying, trying to be like, you know what, maybe I'll just pass on the upside of Stroud and move back a couple of picks. Because I think if you were to look at startup drafts right now, I think if I were drafting CJ Stroud, I feel like is going in the third round. That 103 is going in the either at the turn of the end of the second round or somewhere in the third round. The fifth rookie pick, the one that you want that's going to be Quentin Johnston, you can get Quentin Johnston at 105 in basically every draft. Where's that going? Mid-fourth? Oh,
you can probably get him once.
I think it's going at least a full round later in terms of players, if not more than that CJ Stroud pick.
Here's the two ways I would handle the CJ Stroud, because I like CJ Stroud. It's just compared to what he's valued against, I don't like him that much. So what I would do with him, and kind of what you're saying, is I would take that potentially third round startup pick, whatever you want to consider. I would take CJ Stroud and either I'd move back, I'd move that 103 back and pick up decent value. What decent value to me is I don't know, like an early second, but you could probably get even more considering like that's the last.
Well, how far are you moving back?
I feel pretty confident I could get Quentin Johnston at 106. 107 is probably my cutoff of players that I like really like. Maybe 106. I'll say 106. I'll move back three spots and I pick up an early second. I think that's doable, right?
At least a mid second, but nonetheless.
Yeah, but more so where I'd go though is if I need a quarterback, I'm a team that needs a quarterback, I'm just going to take CJ Stroud. I'll put a little bit on top of him, whatever is necessary. Let me see if the calculator works, because we're comparing quarterbacks to quarterbacks here. See, he's not in the rankings, but I'll just use 103 then instead. Because he's ranked above Kyler Murray. I don't think that's necessarily true. He's ranked above, you know, let's say like Lamar Jackson, who's probably got a little bit of a better output right now. Yeah, so I take that 103. It says you could add just an early second, but I'd add so much as like a late first on top of that kind of player, and I just get that elite quarterback that I already know is very good that's going to give me a bunch of points. I don't think you have to give up a late first on top of 103 to get Kyler Murray. Probably for Lamar, I'd still do that, but obviously I'd rather aim for Kyler Murray. Deshaun Watson is another name that I feel like I don't really have to give up a whole lot, if anything, to go get that player instead of CJ Stroud. Like, if I'm a team looking for a quarterback, I just think there's a lot of, you're in a good spot where there's a lot of ways that you could pivot to just already a very good quarterback. You don't have nearly as much risk, and you already have someone that's given, like, that's proven to put up top end quarterback points, like 20 something plus points. Bryce Young is a baller. Bryce Young just looks fluid. Yeah, I think general consensus is Bryce Young over CJ Stroud. Starting to look by a decent bit at this point. But yeah, do you agree with what I'm saying there? Like,
yeah, I mean, that's probably something that I would look to do. I think I would just look to trade back in the draft. I would just look to see if I could go from 103 to 105, 103 to 106, and be happy doing that. And pick up my really nice receiver. I said that the one thing that I am once again confuzzled about, though, is like if you just drafted CJ Stroud, even unless he looks completely terrible, like you have like the worst outcome, his value is probably going to be roughly the same a year from then, right? We've just seen this with Zach Wilson. Quarterbacks. They don't like immediately fall apart unless they suck, like completely suck.
Zach Wilson did not look good, like he didn't look that good for what's it, the Jets, and then look completely awful. But like you could still have traded Zach Wilson for very close to a same spot where you drafted him, if not high. There are some times where I saw Zach Wilson like rising in value. Now
with all these surprise, quarterbacks, but, there were points where you probably could have sold him for more. Mac Jones, there was points. I mean, his rookie season was actually really fucking good. Trevor Lawrence right now, you can sell him for more. Justin Fields, you can sell him for more. Trey Lance, at one point, you could have probably sold him for more with the peak hype of the 49ers.
There, There was a time where Trey Lance didn't play a game and all these rookie quarterbacks played games and weren't looking as great. Trey Lance was like the 101 when people were like redrafting that class. Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I've almost gone back full circle from being like, okay, I'm going to avoid the quarterbacks to like, dude, fuck it. Maybe just ride the roller coaster and see where we're at after a year. But I don't know. It's just such a risky game to be a part of. If you're passing up on one of these opportunities to trade down, right? If you're passing up, obviously, if you can't do it, you can't do it. Then you're kaputs, right?
I found it's hard to get value trying to trade back, and maybe it's just me, but I found it's hard to get people to really give up and pay up.
The thing is that there has to be someone that wants them.
Yeah.
There has to be someone.
Yeah.
A lot of the times the person has to come to you to be like, yo, are you looking to trade back? And that's how you can get the deals that really make sense to trade back. Because I agree with you. I've really struggled in drafts to move around on draft day because I feel like it's just hard to get a fair deal if I'm initiating where I want to go.
Well, in the same, like, where a lot of people where they're only playing in, you know, 1, 2, 3 leagues, like, they don't have a lot of leagues, like, they've kind of resigned themselves to the fact of, like, who they're getting. Like, they've done the analysis on, like, you know, the 2 or 3 players that should be around their spot, and they're like, I'm very comfortable taking, you know, whatever, Quinn Johnston here at 105. Like, why do I want to trade up to 103 or whatnot?
Right, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, so some more prospect talk.
Yeah, I mean, we can go back into the senior stuff because I'm curious as to what your opinion on this guy is. But one of the Senior Bowl just hype trains that has started a little bit before the Senior Bowl, but it's left the station, and that's Tyjae Spears out of he's out of Tulane, right? I'm not getting that. It's funny. Yes, I was just watching Tulane. Three of his games today.
Yeah, no, he had. To be honest, I don't really watch a whole lot of Tulane football. I don't know who would really, unless you're big on gambling or went to Tulane. But he did pop on my radar against USC, where I think he ran for like 5 touchdowns against the team. The problem is it was kind of a USC team. Now I'm playing into narratives here, but this is a USC team that just lost to Utah. Like, they felt like they belonged in the playoff. Now they're deflated and are playing against Tulane in kind of a meaningless bowl game. So, like, how much effort did they really put in? Whatnot, you could make excuses for why that happened. 4 touchdowns, sorry, against USC. With someone like Tyjae Spears, who's coming from like a I wouldn't call Tulane a small school, but like a, you know, not one of those typical schools we're seeing, it's always kind of a I'll believe it when I see it kind of thing. Like, I want the NFL teams to take a risk on Tyjae Spears. He did have that good Senior Bowl, he had a good senior season. But yeah, it's kind of just at the point of like, if I see him get drafted at like a higher than expected spot, maybe then I'll start to buy more into him. But right now, I'm just going to sit back and wait. Not really too worried about him currently.
I started really liking Tyjae Spears. And to be honest, the first couple games I watched, like when I watched that USC game back, I was like, yeah, this guy's really fucking good. But then the more I got into it, I think the thing that's really tough with Tyjae Spears is that the things that he does well, right, that his vertical quickness, I mean, his quickness in general, where he does these moves where he'll do like a jump cut or a small jump, and he's going like 3/4 speed. And then that little move that he does gets a defender to try and commit to make a tackle. He thinks, oh, yeah, you know, he's like, in midair, I'm going to go tackle him. And then, like, before he lands, he's, like, in the middle of his cut, does a super quick cut, and then all of a sudden a defender's in bad leverage and can't make the tackle. Like, these moves that he does are fucking insane. And when you watch the – like, if you just watch his highlights, you're going to see some of the nastiest jukes and cuts and sidesteps that you're going to see out of a running back. Right? Like
– yeah.
But at the same time, I think that he arguably has like some of the biggest negatives of any running back in this class. I felt like, you know, Tulane was a gap-heavy scheme. I feel like he's going to really struggle in some of these zone concepts. A lot of the times where he was moving laterally behind the line of scrimmage, It was like kind of dicey, his vision, when you asked him to really stretch out his read towards the sideline sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something he's going to struggle with. On top of that, ball security, fumbled the ball a bunch of times, what I saw. And then lastly, probably the biggest knock for fantasy is that in the passing game, I saw that he catches passes. I think he's kind of shit in the receiving game.
he catches like one a game.
Yeah, I think he's kind of shit. Yeah. So it's like...
That's the way to put it lightly.
But like, the positives, right? I think the dude's quick as lightning. His forced missed tackle rate is decent. I think he's at like 0.35, so 35% of his touches he's forcing missed tackle. I kind of wanted that to be up towards what I saw out of Kenneth Walker and ETN, more towards like the 40%. Mm-hmm. Even where a guy like A-Chain is at like 39. So I kind of agree with you. I kind of have to see the NFL draft believe in him like I initially did to really want to go gung-ho. If I were to put a prediction on where he goes, I'm going to say in the first 25 picks of the third round. That's where I'd say. In the third round. I'm hoping that he get...
In like, the NFL draft, do you think he's going to go that high?
I'm hoping he does, because I do want... I like Tyjae Spears, dude. I think that realistically, Tyjae Spears' profile is better than Tank Bigsby and Zach Evans. Oh. I think I'd rather have Tyjae Spears than those guys, even though I think that Tank Bigsby and Zach Evans have a much lower bust rate. Like, Tyjae Spears' bust rate is fucking super high. I just think he has that it factor, and he's able to force enough that he's not... I don't think he's good enough to go in the second. I think the team might take a shot on him in the third, though.
I think he's much more likely to go in the sixth than the third. That being said, if I had put a round on him, like, if I had to give him a pick number, I'd say, like, 150. I don't know. I think that makes him either a late fourth or an early fifth. No, that puts him in the fifth. I don't know. Math's hard.
I could totally see that happening. And like, we saw that happen. Like, a guy like Michael Carter was a dude that was potentially talked about. He played well at the Senior Bowl, had really good character and everything. He kind of checked a lot of boxes, had good production at North Carolina, ended up going in the fourth. If that happens with Tyjae Spears, I'm going to be much more out on him.
What about, like, what's his name? We talked about him last year. Cincinnati running back.
Oh, that Jerome Ford? I hated Jerome Ford.
Yeah, but people liked Jerome Ford last year. I remember people were in on Jerome Ford.
Yeah, well, the thing is that for you to be... You have to pass my tape check as a running back. That's a prerequisite. If you don't, I'm not... Okay. I don't care what you are. I'm not going to draft you. And, man, it's just annoying because... Dude... I could totally see myself taking the bait on Tyjae Spears. And because right now, honestly, in rookie drafts, I have him at a very similar value to Sean Tucker. The problem is that Tucker, his passing game stuff is just way better. So like, from a dynasty perspective, he's just going to go in the first because of that. Whereas Tyjae Spears needs to be this nasty pure runner. I honestly don't know how to value that a ton. Because I feel like we've seen guys become pass catchers and guys that were really good pass catchers all of a sudden not catch any passes. It's like, fuck, I don't really know how to value that. So I just go off of the pure runner, which I know I'm wrong. It's just what I default back to.
Sounds like you're decently higher on Tyjae Spears than I am, though.
Oh, definitely. I definitely am. I do really like Tyjae Spears. I think he's a good little player. I like the flashes that he shows. And I think he's developed enough as a running back. I have questions about his vision, but it's more inconsistencies than, oh man, this guy I don't think can play. Which this is why I think, like, okay, right now I don't care about the size concerns, even though it's definitely a thing to be concerned about. I don't know how an NFL team is going to feel about that. And then going back to the zone scheme thing, it just so happens that, like, at least it feels like two-thirds of the fucking league comes from a coach that all he ran was zone, a zone running scheme. So, like, obviously guys have deviated and we're seeing a shit ton of, like, duo instead of, you know, just, oh, we're going to be completely full zone merchants. We see guys starting to incorporate a lot of these gap schemes, but we really don't see run schemes in the NFL where it's like, yeah, we're gap scheme all the way. We're like Tulane kind of was, which that's going to be a little bit of a culture shock potentially. That might be a thing where teams just say, we can't draft this guy because we don't think he'll fit our scheme. We just much rather take one of the other 1,000 fucking running backs that are available that are slightly as good of a prospect as him, if not better. So
that's part of the reason why I think he falls more in like the 5th, maybe 6th round. I think size concern, he's listed at what?
He was listed at like 190.
5'10", 195.
He weighed in at 204.
I was going to say, he looks bigger. Yeah, he looks bigger than what his listed weight was.
But then again, 204 is small. Like,
yeah, it's not, you want to see like 210 and not up, 215.
And especially when you're not a pass catcher. Like, this is the problem with Tajay, is that I believe in the talent. Right now, I do.
Mm-hmm.
He's just so raw, man. He is a really raw prospect, especially for a senior. That's just rough. That's just rough.
Yeah. I'm not going to buy in. But if you want to move on, speaking of senior running backs,
I feel like I almost just talked myself out of him.
Good. Well, like, where would you, like, where would you take him, man? Like, you wouldn't have to reach that high on him to get him in.
I would scoop him up in the mid second right now.
Oh, okay, that's actually very high. I thought you're gonna be like, oh yeah, like, I think
he's a good rookie draft a mid second. I feel like that's not super high
to get Tajay Sharpe.
I mean,
we went through a whole, I know it was before the Senior Bowl, but it was after his bowl game. We went through a whole 2-round draft and he didn't get picked.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got changed. I mean, man, maybe a mid-second is high. Let me think. I mean, maybe a late second. I don't know, because right now without the NFL draft, like, it's just hard to be like, oh, yeah, because you're right. There is the possibility that he just goes in the 6th, and it's like, yeah. I just lit a mid-second on fire when I could have had a tight end that goes in the first.
Yeah, I think he's like a late third rookie draft pick. I don't know. We'll see. This is all kind of theoretical, and then he's going to get drafted, and then we could hammer it down more. All right. One other senior running back, though, Zach Charbonnet, who Skoll said in chat, and we were going to get to him, he was impressed with Charbonnet. I was high on Charbonnet last year. I was like, oh, I like him over, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then he stayed until his senior year. And then I got a little lower on him. But I'm still in on Zach Charbonnet, I guess I'd say. Like, at cost. I like him at cost is how I'd describe that. What are your thoughts?
I agree. Zach Charbonnet is like the anti every other running back in this class to me, because I firmly have him at that very late first, very early second range, because I think he's probably the safest running back in this draft in terms of, you know what you're getting. The guy is a beast in basically every phase of what you could ask a running back to do. I think he's virtually locked into getting late second or top 10 pick in the 3rd round draft capital.
I so am like, not like a late second.
To me, I think his floor is what David Montgomery was drafted at, what Daryl Henderson was drafted at, and I think, or AJ Dillon, right? I think more realistically, a team that wants a running back that thinks, I want a dude who, no matter what I do, I know that this guy's going to be able to fit it, and that's Zach Charbonnet. And I think the thing that's a misconception about Zach Charbonnet that I have compared to what others say is that in between the tackles, I wish he broke more tackles. I think he relies a little bit too much on, I'm going to shove my shoulder as far down your throat as I possibly can. Whereas on the sidelines, his feet are really good, and he breaks a lot of tackles in space with the ball in his hands. If he's able to transition that element of his game into his runs in between the tackles and, oh, I have a little bit of a gap here in, let's say, a zone run concept, I can cut it back here, using his really good balance and his underrated quickness to make guys miss, gives him a really good ceiling. But I think other than that, it's kind of like out of the box, here's what you're getting with Charbonnet. Like, other than that, I don't really think he has a ton of room to improve. But then again, I think he can come in day one and just play. You can give him 20 carries and he can be good and for basically every NFL team. To me, I feel like I just see him in a Falcons uniform and then he goes in the first round pick of rookie drafts.
Yeah, I just like comparing him to last year, right? I like him way more than I do Damian Pierce and James Cook and those kind of players. And I think he's going to be drafted around where they were getting drafted in rookie drafts. And I just think he's a significantly better bet, a significantly better prospect. Correct me if I'm wrong. He didn't attend the Senior Bowl, right? He wasn't.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So that actually is a good sign to me. That probably means he's pretty comfortable with where he's getting drafted, roughly. So that leads me to believe he's probably a second round pick. That's what I'd guess, at least. But yeah, I don't want to repeat everything that you said. But yeah, I'm in on Zach Charbonnet too. I was super in on him last year. I thought he was going to come out, and they didn't. But
so right now, without looking at Bijan, he is my RB3. And
so you're saying Bijan will move him down?
I'm assuming that Bijan's going to be one. I have Jahmyr Gibbs 2, and then a chain Charbonnet at 3 and 4, with a chain and Charbonnet being pretty darn close. I just think that a chain ceiling is a little bit higher than Charbonnet. But Charbonnet is a dude that I would love to be picking up in startups right now, because I think he's a guy whose stock is almost virtually guaranteed to increase by the time that the draft rolls around and rookie drafts roll around.
Charbonnet, I'd have at, like, if I do the full everyone, I'd probably have him at 4 or 5.
What is his ADP right now? Do you know, like, generally speaking, where, like, if you were to guess where he's going around, like, what do you think he is right now on rookie drafts?
I mean, if I was looking at just like the rookie rankings on Keep Trade Cut, which could give you like at least a general idea. Hold on, sorry. I looked at rookies, not Devi. We want to look at Devi. He's going as the 1-2 Keep Trade Cut. I'm going to keep Will Levis, trade Jackson Smith. No, sorry. Keep Quinn Johnson, trade JSN, cut Will Levis. He's going as the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. He's going as the 12th player off the board. So 1-12.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think that's completely fine to draft him at. I'm definitely in at cost.
Yeah, I would agree. He's running back 3 off the board, though. He's behind Bijan, Gibbs, and then it's him.
I think that's completely fair, because a lot of people are concerned about a chain weight scenario, which I think is valid. I just absolutely love A-Chain, so I don't care. If I did care, then yeah, Charbonnet is my RB3 right now. Fun.
Yeah, so I was super, super confused for a second, but I screwed something up. Blake Corum, it's Devi. So Blake Corum was running back 10, but I mixed up my Michigan running backs. And I was like, who am I thinking of? Who's the other Michigan running
back? Donovan Edwards.
Yeah, maybe that's who I was thinking of. Where I was like, how is he ranked above A-Chain? Because that's currently the case. But Blake Corum's ranked above him in Devi.
I have 102 and 103 in one QB. Want to move 103 for a proven player or move back to draft him? Both picks are not mine. I made bets on bad teams in my league and guessed right.
LMAO, yeah, it's always congrats. Good. It's always a good bet. All right. Well, this is one QB, so that changes things a lot, because there are two players that I consider overvalued in CJ Stroud and Bryce Young, who shouldn't be taken there. Now, I don't know what one QBs are, but I'm assuming those two guys are not there. Like, I think I feel pretty comfortable saying they're probably late first round picks in one quarterback leagues. So then that lessens the pool to, you got Bijan 1, Gibbs, Quinn Johnston, 2 and 3. It's
probably, I think right now it's Gibbs, JSN, 2 and 3.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I have 102 and 103. Want to move 103 for a proven player or move back to draft him? What do you do there? 103. Can you get Drake London with 103 in a one quarterback league?
Maybe. I think it depends on the person.
I would push to try and get Drake London at 103 if you want like a proven player. Because I know technically, like,
I would. Oh, you're taking JSN 102 lock. I mean, then why not go? I mean, I would trade
102. Gibbs at 103 feels pretty nice then. 103 trying Amon-Ra, don't hate that.
I feel isn't Gibbs consensus 102 and 1 QB right now because they're still running back premium, or is that not a thing anymore?
Yeah, maybe he knows his league more than we do, so like maybe he feels pretty confident.
Because like yeah, if you stay at 103, I mean I guess like JSN's probably my wide receiver 1 right now, but it's like I'm not crying if I don't get him. Like if you're going to be really upset if you don't get him, then I completely understand.
Yeah, too light for me. Gibbs scares me. Yeah, I think that's a big knock on him too, as well as what you have with A-Chain. I'm just wondering who's ranked higher, Drake London or Amon-Ra? Probably Amon-Ra, right? Yeah, Amon-Ra's one.
I mean, nonetheless, like if you could go try and trade it for Olave 103. You could try and trade it for London. I doubt you'll get Garrett Wilson, so there's probably no point of even trying for that.
I saw Skull saying earlier that he was in on Drake London. I would be... This is like a JT hot take coming in here. But I think you can make a case for Drake London to be the wide receiver 3 in Dynasty right now. And that's... He didn't do a whole lot his rookie year, except just dominate Falcons targets. But he ain't like put points up, which has him kind of deflated in value. And to get him for 103, the third pick in a rookie draft, I think is a very good steal. Even if you don't agree that he's wide receiver 3, I think he's kind of undervalued. So I'd move 103 for Drake London. And I think that is a deal that you could get done.
I mean, if you're talking about just pure draft profiles, London probably is wide receiver 3. Right? I mean, Devontae Smith, Jamar Chase have better profiles than him.
He's wide receiver 13 on Keep Trade Cut.
I think his profile, the Waddles might be better. And then if you're counting Pitts, which Pitts obviously isn't a receiver, but like...
Yeah, but...
He was kind of drafted to fucking be one, like.
Yeah. Yeah, except they just didn't use him as one. Just made no sense. Regardless, right? Even if you have all those guys above me, he's currently rated wide receiver 13, and you're getting him for a very good price. I already talked to London owner too. He seemed really interested. Yeah, I think that's the move. I think that's what you do. You trade 103 for Drake London. Because other than Quinn Johnston, who I'm not even sure about, I'm pretty sure I'd rank Drake London over Quinn Johnston.
I would.
Yeah. So, and the other receivers, it's just a given. I'd rank Drake London above them. So, yeah, that.
Yeah, I agree with JT. Move. If you're looking to mitigate your risk, that's a good move. Nonetheless, like, this is a perfect world. Like, if you could just move 103 into 105, 106, I'm not sure I'd want to go to 107, but 106, 105, you're still getting a guy that has good draft. Like, he just checks a lot of boxes, has a lot of the same hit rate as a 103, 102.
I wish I knew the study off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure if you're drafting like a proven, not proven, but like a sophomore wide receiver who checks the same kind of boxes that Drake London does, like this would be the cheapest time you could buy him for the next like 5 years. So that's the kind of player I'd want to get on. I think Garrett Wilson also makes that list, and maybe Chris Olave as well. I don't think George Pickens did. I wish I had the study in front of me. But yeah, It's an interesting.
Well, I'm just surprised that these guys aren't all top 10 dynasty receivers. Like, to me, I feel like when the owners that have them are valuing them as top 10 dynasty receivers. But in the startup drafts, it's like we're seeing the other guys go above, you know, like, okay, so obviously Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, rightfully so. But then it's like CeeDee Lamb, AJ Brown, DK Metcalf. Like, not that these are bad picks or anything. It's just, like you said, I feel like these guys are almost locks that in the beginning of the season next year, surprise, surprise, they're all going to produce, and then they're all going to be top 10 receivers.
Well, like, for example, Drake London, he only finished as wide receiver 31. Like, he didn't have, like, a crazy season. Same thing with, like, Garrett Wilson, who was going nuclear for a short period of time. And then, like you were saying earlier, this offense then put up 3 points per game to end the season. Like, it's kind of just been bad situations and bad, just unlucky draws is how I describe it, where the players themselves are actually very good. It's just kind of where they are or their perceived value of where they are. That's hurting them, but that can change very quickly, especially for those two teams where Garrett Wilson might be getting Aaron Rodgers and Drake London, who the Falcons can do whatever, essentially.
Well, this kind of goes back to this conversation that I know we had like last year where, you know, you go right, like nowadays it's everyone's kind of victory lapping their takes from previous years and whatnot. And you'll see a lot of these people that are like, oh, yeah, I'm so good at ranking these rookie receivers. Like, look at my previous rookie rankings, right? And they're like, yeah, I was super high on Ja'Marr Chase, or I was super high on Devontae Smith, this, that, and the other. Like, I was drafting him in my rookie drafts at wide receiver 1 and 2. But then you look at the startup ADP, and it's like, okay, why were they going in the 4th and 5th round of startups then, right? So, like, this phenomena is very interesting to me because – like I said before, if we were to just grade people off of their draft profiles alone, I agree with you in that Drake London has a top 5, arguably top 3 receiver profile. Just draft capital, stats they put up in college, size, weight, height, early declared, that stuff. Right? Yeah, athleticism. Mm-hmm. Drake London is like one of the fucking premier dudes. So why, even if he checks all the boxes from a production standpoint, at least for us, right, which is mainly the target share is really all we were concerned about, target share and did you not do nothing? Like,
he also has super high PFF receiving grade, which people don't really look like.
So like
your Joe Smoes don't look into.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like there's still a disconnect. Same thing with Garrett Wilson. It's like the guy checks every fucking box. I'd be drafting Garrett Wilson as a top 5 receiver in Dynasty right now. Well, I feel like it should be a hot take if you're not. Is he in the
at that at that? No, I'm pretty sure not. At the end of the day, people just care about points. Oh no, he is. He's wide receiver 5.
Okay, I was gonna say if he's not, I would be kind of confused.
He's right next to Jalen Waddle, though. They're pretty interchangeable.
I understand the people's argument, the common argument of, oh well, I'd rather take a more proven guy like a DK Metcalf. Like, yeah, but this guy is the younger asset that has upside still. Like, not that DK Metcalf is bad, but like, you're gonna take DK Metcalf over Garrett Wilson? Fuck, I'm not. I would like you were saying with Stroud earlier, I'll draft one of these dudes just to fucking trade him. Like,
yeah. To me, I just think, like, it's hard to say they're proven, but like with what we saw Garrett Wilson and Drake London do on the field, and I'm going to put Chris Olave in that conversation as well, I think they're pretty close to proven, but I think the community as a whole is just not quick enough to catch on that fact yet. Like, they kind of discredit a rookie season and can point to like variance. Same thing with Amon-Ra. Where's that coming in?
No, I accidentally pulled out the clown face instead of the...
yeah, I saw it on the YouTube.
This is why I think Keep Trick Cut sucks nowadays. Not sucks, but it's just not as good as it...
It's points, Frank.
I don't know. Tyreek Hill is not valued higher than Drake London. DK Metcalf is not valued higher than Drake London. You cannot convince me. I don't care. There's nothing you will say. You could show me thousands of trades of you trading DK Metcalf for Drake London or Tyreek Hill for Drake London. I still will not believe you. This should not happen. This should not happen. I can at least understand DK. Tyreek Hill, no fucking shot.
No. No way. I tried to trade Tyreek Hill and... Oh, who's the other one? It was two players ranked higher than Drake London and I believe Treylon Burks on Keep Trade Cut. I tried to trade Tyreek Hill and another player that was ranked higher than... And it was kind of like, no, why would I do that kind of trade? To be fair, why would you do that? But
I was trading to someone. I don't know. Maybe part of the problem is like I see everyone in the Dynasty subreddit saying, oh, well, the picks are so overvalued. The young players are so overvalued. It's like, dude, I see things like this and I... Are they? I don't think so.
Well, they try and do like a one size fits all because I'm sure there are like you had Jameson Williams on there. Jameson Williams has like two catches, like he is overvalued. But then you look at players like Chris Olave, Drake London, Garrett Wilson, and it's like no, they're either aptly valued or they're undervalued.
Okay, so let's dissect the problem. Is that a young players are overvalued problem that Jameson is that high, or is it the Jameson Williams people happen to be a little bit fucking cuckoo? You know, is that the problem? Because I think Jameson Williams, like, I don't know. I just think that some of these older players, like Tyreek Hill, 27th overall asset in Dynasty, no shot. No shot.
If we did a startup right now, he's not sniffing
close. Very to early round. Third. I don't give a fuck if he puts up another 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns next year. Nope, not for me. I will gladly take my super hype young player who I can trade for double the price a year later. Double the price of Tyreek Hill, right? Like Tyreek Hill.
I know what you're saying.
I don't know. All right, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, that's all I have to say.
I'm out of words.
All right, I find this was a good place to cut it too.
All right, yeah, if you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. Really appreciate it. We'll be back next week. Super Bowl.
Check out for our commercial. We bought a Super Bowl ad.
Oh yeah, it cost us a cool $3 million. It's gonna be juicer of a 3rd and 20 during the game. And there we go.
You guys are laughing at us now, but wait until it's us and Tom Brady on a beach. And
that's in the script. Subscribe
to 3rd and 20.
It's in the script for the Super Bowl. Yeah, thank you guys so much, Skull. Appreciate it, man. Peace out. Thanks, everyone. Have a good one.